All right. Hello, everyone. It's good to be here with you. In our last Sunday in Pal Talk. We're here now for the Guiding Light. I'm reading from the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, and we're in the section called Guru and His Grace. And that's where I'm reading from. What I'd like to do before we get started contemplating the teachings of Ramana Maharshi is I would like to play a song. I'm going to play a song from YouTube, but actually, right this second, I'm still scanning YouTube to see what song I want to play. Okay, here's a good one. It's a little long, but it's a good song. It's a song by Kirtana, and it's called Ramana's Song. So we'll listen to that as we get ready to contemplate the teachings of Ramana Maharshi. Here we go.
Never left your neck. Why not end the ceaseless string? And enter with love the temple of your heart. Heart is the holy sanctum where I reside. Offer to me the ruby of your mind. That is the sweetest offering, mine that has died. Be still, know that I am. I am that I am. Be still, know that I am. I am that I am.
Lovely song. So, as I mentioned, we're here to look at the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And I am starting at the top of page 67, which is the section called The Guru and His Grace. All right, so this is the question from the devotee. How can the silence of the guru, who gives no initiation, nor does any other tangible act, be more powerful than his word? How is such silence better than the study of scriptures? So when we were here, was it last week? No, I wasn't here last week. I just remembered I was traveling. So it was 2 weeks ago. So when we were here 2 weeks ago, we looked at some questions, or it might even have been 3 weeks ago when we looked at these questions. We looked at some questions about gurus who do initiations, and I remember mentioning, you know, I don't know a lot about the Hindu culture, but I do know that, you know, people expect the guru to initiate you into some kind of a special practice. And I mentioned the one that I know about, and I'm sure there are hundreds and hundreds of others, but the one that I know about is transcendental meditation. That if you have ever taken transcendental meditation, you know that they initiate you into what they call a mantra, which is actually a sound. It's not a word or a sentence. It's a sound that's supposed to be your special sound, and you learn your special sound or your special mantra, and then you meditate on that. That's a type of an initiation. And so really what people kind of expect from gurus is that gurus give them something they don't already have. I kind of think of it as like a magic bullet, you know. Like, you know, the idea is I'm not awake, I'm suffering, I must be missing something or lacking something that you, the guru, have. And I need to get it from you, whether it's being initiated in a specific practice, whether it's learning your teachings, whether it's having you transmit enlightenment to me. You know, I don't have it, you do have it, and I got to get it from you. That's the mindset. And so what Ramana Maharshi was teaching as he was being questioned by devotees who believe this was, you know, he was teaching really that the guru's best teaching is just silence. We might call that just being or abiding as the self. And so this person who has this mindset of I'm lacking, you aren't lacking. There's got to be something you can give me that I don't have that's going to wake me up or at least help me get out of this suffering. You know, this question is coming from that mindset. So here's the question again. How can the silence of the guru, who gives no initiation, nor does any other tangible act, be more powerful than his word? How is such silence better than the studying of scriptures? And I really remember having that mindset myself. I remember thinking that if I was to be with a physical guru, and the guru did nothing the whole time I was there but sit with his eyes closed, not even paying attention to me, that would be a waste of my time. Because I didn't get anything, right? So here's how Ramana Maharshi answers that question. Silence is the most potent form of work. However vast and emphatic the scriptures may be, they fail in their effect. The guru is quiet, and grace prevails in all. This silence is more vast and more emphatic than all the scriptures put together. So I'm feeling guided to look up two words just to be very specific about their meaning. The first word is potent. And the dictionary says the potent means having great power, influence, or effect. Having great power, influence, or effect. And so Ramana Maharshi says, silence is the most potent form of work. So silence has the greatest power, it has the greatest influence, and it has the greatest effect. And of course, this is what the devotee is having trouble believing. Ramana Maharshi starts by restating that. The other word that I'm feeling guided to look up is emphatic. Emphatic is showing or giving emphasis, expressing something, it says forcibly or clearly. So I'm gonna go with the clearly here. In fact, the second definition is definite and clear. So emphatic is emphasis, giving emphasis, definite and clear. Giving emphasis, definite and clear. And so the two times he uses that word in this answer, he says, however vast and emphatic the scriptures may be, right? So no matter how much emphasis they may have, no matter how definite they may be, no matter how clear they may be. And we all have read different books. I think everybody here has read different books. And we're probably all of the opinion that some of the spiritual books we have read are more clear than some of the other spiritual books we have read. Would you agree? So we would say that some of the spiritual books are more emphatic. And some are not as emphatic or may not be emphatic at all. But however, Ramana Maharshi says, However vast and emphatic the scriptures may be, they fail in their effect, which means they're not potent. He just said silence is the most potent form of work, right? Which means they have an effect. They have a powerful effect. Silence has a powerful effect. But he says the scriptures fail in their effect. The scriptures do not have a powerful effect. So I just, the question that arose in my mind is that true? You know, I really like Ramana Maharshi, and maybe you do too. Maybe that's why you're here. But is what he's saying right? You know, is it true that scriptures are not potent, that they've never had a powerful effect? And when I asked in my mind, is that true? The answer I got was yes, but let me explain the clarity that came with that yes. If we are to just read scripture or any spiritual material with the mind, it is nothing but an intellectual endeavor. And an intellectual endeavor has no effect whatsoever. We can become very, very smart about scriptures or spiritual books. We can quote them. We can parrot what we say, what we've read, parrot what we've read, which means, you know, repeat it back. But as long as it stays at the intellectual level, it has no actual effect. For example, I'm sure you all know that you can read A Course in Miracles. You can even go to a course group every week, and you can still get angry at the tiniest thing that doesn't go your way. Right? It has no effect. But then some people may argue, but it did have an effect on me. But let's look at that carefully and see again, is that true? If you feel that A Course in Miracles or NTI or any other spiritual teaching has had an effect on you, was it really the teaching that had an effect on you? Or was it because you went within with the teaching? You know, I often call that contemplation, when we go within with the teaching. Not just reading the words, not just discussing the words, certainly not debating the words or parroting the words, but actually being with them in silence so that they kind of unfold or unpack themselves within us. And we begin to have insights that we would never ever have if we did not take those words into silence. So really, is it true that scripture or spiritual written materials affect us? Or is it true that scripture or spiritual materials are often the catalyst that catapult us into silence? But what we're really affected by is the silence, our own contemplation, or our own meditation. So again, Ramana Maharshi says, silence is the most potent form of work. However vast and emphatic the scriptures may be, they fail in their effect. They fail. Without the silent contemplation or the silent meditation of the word can have no effect. You can learn it. You can memorize it. You can quote it. But it has no effect unless you take it into silence. Silence is the most potent form of work. However vast and emphatic the scriptures may be, they fail in their effect. The guru is quiet, and grace prevails in all I find that sentence very, very interesting too. First of all, he says the guru is quiet. Now, certainly one way to understand that would be that the guru is this other person outside of me who's being silent right now, not giving me anything, not initiating me in anything, not teaching me in anything. But I don't think that's the best way to understand those words. The guru is quiet. You know, it kind of reminds me of the line in the Bible that says, God is love. You know, that doesn't mean that God is some divine being who happens to be loving. God is love means that the word God and the word love are synonymous. They are the exact same thing. God and love are two words that point to the same thing. Well, this sentence I think is like that. The guru is quiet. Guru and quiet are the same thing. Silence would be another term. The guru is quiet, or the guru is silence. The silence itself is the teacher. It's in silence that you have insight. It's in silence that you see what you have not seen before. One of the things that I've been working on today, started working on today, and I've just been working like a madwoman. In fact, I worked all the way up until Kate let go of the mic and gave it to Ken. And then I thought, ooh, I better quit working because he'll be giving the mic to me in a moment. But what I've been working on is starting to build the new web pages for our retreat house. And one of the last pages that I was working on before I needed to let go of work was a page called the Retreat House Amenities, which is a page that lists, you know, what we have at the retreat house that might cause you to want to come there. And one of the things I listed as a retreat house amenity are quiet hours. Right now, we have quiet hours from 9 p.m. in the evening until 11 a.m. in the morning each day. And I think those quiet hours are an amenity. I think they're one of the most important things about the retreat house because the guru is quiet, right? It's during those quiet hours when you are spending time in contemplation or in meditation without anyone talking to you, without, you know, any distractions of any kind. When you're making yourself available to the guru, to the quiet, so that you can have the insight. To me, the quiet hours are maybe the most important amenity. To me, the quiet hours are probably the most important amenity. And in fact, if we didn't have quiet hours, I don't think we would be following the guidance that led to the retreat house, the guidance to provide the environment that enables each person to take their next step with God. If God and guru are synonymous, and guru and quiet are synonymous, how can you take your next step with God if you do not have quiet hours? Right? So it's a very important amenity. And in fact, one of the things we envision, just to let you know, because for some people, 9 p.m. to 11 a.m. will be plenty of quiet. I know that. And they will be ready to move, and they will be ready to talk. But for some people, it won't be enough quiet. And of course, one of the things you can do if it's not enough quiet is, you know, you could spend the afternoon taking a quiet walk somewhere. There's lots of lovely places to go and walk, or maybe go into your own room, you know, and close the door. But one of the things we envision is a chapel. There's a sing it's a sing it's not even really a single car garage. That's not true. There's a garage next to the house that you can't get to from inside the house. You have to go outside to enter it. And that garage is not even large enough for a car. They built the garage as a place to put their ATVs, as far as we can tell. So it's a very small garage. And what we would like to do is we would like to turn that garage into a chapel. It has a loft. We would like to make the loft a meditation loft. So a chapel with a meditation loft. And it has its own entrance from outside. Again, you can't get to it from the house. So once we're able to convert this garage into a chapel, that will be a 24-hour quiet space. Right? So it's a place where the quiet hours will be in effect 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Yeah, it does sound wonderful. It does to me too. So you'll be able to go there anytime. But there's work that needs to be done there, and of course money is needed. You know, you can't do anything without money in this world. But it's definitely one of the things that we would like to do as soon as we are able is convert that to a chapel with a meditation loft. Again, a very important amenity, because the guru is quiet, right? That's what this sentence means to me. And then it says, the guru is quiet, and grace prevails in all, right? Like I said, the mindset is that I'm lacking, right? I'm not awake. I'm suffering. There's something wrong with me. I'm missing something, right? That's the attitude. And the guru has something that needs to be given to me. That's the mindset. But when Ramana Maharshi says the guru is quiet and grace prevails in all, what I hear him saying is, if you go into the silence yourself, grace prevails in you. There is insight that will make itself known in you. Clarity that will make itself known in you. The next thing I want to say, I don't know what word to use because it's really beyond wisdom. It's truth is the word I'll use. Truth that will make itself known in you. Remember, he started this paragraph with, silence is the most potent form of work, the most powerful, the most effective. Silence is the most potent form of work. The guru is quiet, and grace prevails in all. So to me, what this says is you don't actually need a teacher. You don't actually need a guru outside of you. You certainly don't need someone else to give you something you don't have. I mean, that's a terrible illusion. What you need is silence. What you need is quiet. And if you go into a genuine contemplative or meditative silence, grace will arise in you as the wisdom, as the clarity, or as the truth. You know, whatever you are ready for. Silence is the most potent form of work. The guru is quiet, and grace prevails in all. This silence is more vast and more emphatic than all the scriptures put together. Oh my God, think about that. Think about that. He says, silence is more vast and more emphatic than all the scriptures put together. Think about how important silence is. See why I said the quiet hours are one of our amenities at the retreat house, maybe our most important amenity. See why I want to convert the garage, which really right now is useless, it's useless space because it's so small, into a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week place of silence, chapel with a meditation loft. Because silence is more vast and more emphatic than all the scriptures put together. You know, again, when the guidance came for the retreat house, the guidance, although it was wordless, was very, very clear that our job was to create an environment in which everyone could come, all could come, in order to take their individual next step with God, whatever it is, right? Our job is to create the environment. Well, what I hear Ram Maharshi saying is if there is an external guru, if you come to the external guru, and the external guru is providing an environment of silence, just being silent and allowing you to be silent, to be in contemplation, to be in meditation. That guru is providing the environment that allows you to take your next step with God, right? That's what the guru is doing. In fact, in the guidance I received in San Damiano, when I asked for guidance about the retreat house, and the guidance came, regarding leadership, we were told that leaders are to be the environment. Be the environment. Well, that's what a guru like Ramana Maharshi is doing when he's being silent. Even though you may have traveled all the way around the world to come and see him, and you walk into the meditation hall and you find him being silent, he's being the environment that provides you with the opportunity to go within, to be with the guru, with the quiet, and to receive the grace that is within you awaiting to make itself known. Right? That's the real reason you travel halfway around the world to go to the meditation hall at Ramana Ashram in Tiruvannamalai. To be silent, to be quiet, and to receive insight. And of course, that's why you'll come to the Awakening Together Retreat House. For most of you, you won't have to travel halfway around the world. You come there to be silent more than you are at home, to go within deeper than you do in your busy life, to receive the insight that's just waiting there for you, waiting for you to take the time to come in and receive it. So again, how can the silence of the guru, who gives no initiation, nor does any other tangible act, be more powerful than his word? How is such silence better than the study scriptures? Maybe now you can even see how ignorant the question is, right? The idea again, I need to get something from something outside of me. Ramana Maharshi says, silence is the most potent form of work. However vast and emphatic the scriptures may be, they fail and their effect. The guru is quiet, and grace prevails in all. This silence is more vast and more emphatic than all the scriptures put together. The next question is, but can the devotee obtain happiness? One thing I notice, and I'll be honest, I don't listen to other teachers Purposely? Hardly ever. What I do is I turn on Awakening Together Radio, like when I'm, get showering and getting dressed in the morning, or if I'm doing something like cleaning house, or if I'm doing something like cooking. And so in that way, I hear teachers, but I'm not one to sit down and seek out a teacher and go and listen to them. I don't do that. When I have time, for spiritual enrichment, I want to go within. I don't want to go and find a teacher and listen to them. All of my time that I have to focus on spirituality is spent in contemplation and meditation. It's spent going within. I don't go outside and try to learn from someone else. But of course, I do hear teachers, like I said, when I'm getting dressed in the morning or cleaning house or cooking, because I'll put on Awakening Together Radio and I'll hear whoever's on. And often, of course, I'll hear those questioners, because a lot of the teachings that we hear on Awakening Together Radio when the sanctuary is not open, a lot of them are people asking questions of the teachers. And so often, what's beyond whatever words are in the question is, how can I stop suffering? Like that, sometimes that question is asked directly, but often it isn't. There's another question. But if you're really listening, what you hear behind the words is, how can I stop suffering? That's what so many people are seeking. And that's really, at this point, all that they're seeking. They aren't consciously seeking truth, although that's what they'll find if they continue on the path. But all they want is to be happy, to stop suffering. And that's what they seek. And that's what this person seems to be seeking too, because look at the question. Listen to the question. But can the devotee obtain happiness? Do you hear? This person's asking, is it even possible to escape suffering? Or is suffering just a fact of life for humans? Right? But can the devotee obtain happiness? Is it even possible? Ramana Maharshi says, the devotee surrenders himself to the master, and it means that there is no vestige of individuality retained by him. If the surrender is complete, all sense of self is lost, and then there can be no misery or sorrow. The eternal being is nothing but happiness. That comes as a revelation. This kind of reminds me of something Jesus said in the Bible. It was after the rich man came and asked Jesus what he needed to do to obtain the kingdom of heaven. And Jesus told him that he needed to go sell everything, give it to the poor, and then come and follow me. Of course, this is one of the scriptures that influenced St. Francis the most, right? Sell everything, give it to the poor, and then come and follow me. And the rich man said, basically, I can't do that. I have family members and servants that are dependent on me. If I sell everything and give it to the poor, what's going to happen to them? I can't do this. And he walked away disillusioned. Disillusioned. But he wasn't the only one that was disillusioned that day. The apostles were also disillusioned. The apostles couldn't believe that Jesus even gave that advice. It just sounded like too much. Here was this rich man who was actually seen to be a very good man. and Jesus was just asking too much of him. So in the discussion that followed, this is a discussion with the famous line that it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of the needle than for a rich man to inherit the kingdom of heaven. In that particular discussion, Jesus said something about awakening. He didn't use that word, but awakening being impossible for man. Let me see if I can find a Bible. Gosh, you know what? I had a Bible that used to sit right here next to me, and I took it to Levita so that it could sit right there next to me in Levita. Another result right here next to me now. But I do have a Bible on my phone. Yeah, you know what? I like your idea. I think I can do that faster than I can on phone. I think the NIV Bible online is going to be much faster for me to get to. I know how, believe it or not, I know how to use the online Bible faster than the Kindle Bible. So let me go to that. Okay, and it's in Rich, it's in, sorry, not Rich, Mark 10. That's where the story of the rich man is. Okay, here it is. The disciples were even more amazed. This is after the rich man walked away, right? And the disciples were also disillusioned at this time, not just the rich man. It says the disciples were even more amazed, which really means, in this case, disillusioned. Right? The disciples were even more amazed and said to each other, "Who then can be saved?" Jesus looked at them and said, "With man, this is impossible, but not with God. All things are possible with God." Right? So, with man, awakening is impossible, but not with God. All things are possible with God. All right, let's go back now to what Ramana Maharshi is saying, because he's really saying the same thing in a different way, right? He says, the devotee surrenders himself to the master, and it means that there is no vestige of individuality retained by him. If the surrender is complete, all sense of self is lost, and then there can be no misery or sorrow. If I maintain a sense of self, right, then I am, as far as I believe myself to be, man. And in this sense, man means human, not male, right? Human. I am man. I am human. I am person. And what did Jesus say about man, about human, about person? Right? When they asked, who then can be saved? Or we could call that, who then can awaken? Or who then can attain freedom? He said, with man, this is impossible. With man, attaining freedom, awakening, even happiness is impossible. As long to the degree that the sense of self is present, that is to the degree that you will suffer. To the degree that the sense of self is not present, that is to the degree that you will know happiness. It's not that I am lacking something that a guru has to give me, and that's why I'm suffering, right? And that's the idea. Again, I'm lacking something. There's some magic bullet that I don't have, some insight that I don't have, and I have to get it from a book or from a guru or from something. It's not that. It's not that I'm lacking something. It's actually that I have too much. I have a sense of self. I have too much. I'm not lacking. I have too much. I have a sense of self. And that's why I'm suffering. It's not that I have to get something I don't have. I have to let go of what I do have. Right? The problem is that I value the idea of me, the independent individual self. I value my way. I value my desires. I value my values. I have too much. I'm not lacking. I have too much. What I have is in the way of my happiness. This is why Jesus told the rich man, and think of this symbolically for a moment, go and sell what you have. You have too much. Think of this symbolically for a moment. Your sense of self is what's in the way of happiness. The me that you value, the my way that you seek, it's in the way. Go and sell what you have, and then come and follow me, because you have too much. What you value, whether you would call it your riches or not, it's what you actually perceive as your riches, your me, your thoughts, your desires, your will. That's what's in the way. That's what's causing your suffering. That's what's blocking your happiness. So Ramana Maharshi says, the devotee surrenders himself to the master. Now, what is the master? Well, in the previous paragraph, he said the guru is quiet. The devotee surrenders himself to the quiet, to the silent. Those of you who are currently in gentle healing may be recognizing this as the opposite of mental chatter. Right? The mental chatter is the me. The mental chatter is the riches that you need to sell. And again, it's the riches because you value it, right? The mental chatter is the me. The mental chatter is the riches that you need to sell. Give away to the poor means completely relinquish any ownership or attachment to it. Completely, fully, without any reservation, relinquish. Right? That's what give it to the poor means. Don't reserve any part of the me or the mental chatter or the will or the personal desires. Don't keep any of that for yourself. Go and sell it and give it completely away, right? Completely distance yourself from that. That is the same as surrendering to the master, to the silence, to the inward guide. Relinquish the mental chatter. Relinquish the personal will. Your values, your desires, surrender fully without any reservation to the silence. The devotee surrenders himself to the master, and it means that there is no vestige of individuality retained by him, no holdout. Nothing that you're trying to stick in your pocket and keep for yourself, right? The devotee surrenders himself to the master, and it means that there is no vestige of individuality retained by him. If the surrender is complete, all sense of self is lost, and then there can be no misery or no sorrow. Just as the guru is quiet, misery, suffering is individual self. So if you fully relinquish the individual self, you fully relinquish suffering. They are one and the same. Michael Singer says that the thinking is suffering. Mental chatter is suffering. The me, the I thought, the ego is suffering. The ego doesn't actually cause suffering, which is something that we often say. The ego is suffering. The guru is quiet, and the me is suffering. The me is suffering. So Ramana Maharshi says, the devotee surrenders himself to the master, and it means that there is no vestige of individuality retained by him. If the surrender is complete, all sense of self is lost, and then there can be no misery or sorrow. The eternal being is nothing but happiness. Right? What's left when you surrender fully the sense of self is happiness. That's what it is. You cannot know sorrow without the sense of self, because what's left when there is no sense of self is pure happiness. The devotee surrenders himself to the master, and it means that there is no vestige of individuality retained by him. If the surrender is complete, all sense of self is lost, and then there can be no misery or sorrow. The eternal being is nothing but happiness. That comes as a revelation. It means that you see that for yourself when you surrender the sense of self, right? Until then, you actually believe that somehow the sense of self can be happy, right? And in fact, the question is, but can the devotee obtain happiness? It's like saying, but can the sense of self ever be happy? And in effect, what Ramana Maharshi just said is, no. The sense of self cannot ever be happy. And in fact, Ramana Maharshi teaches that whenever we experience happiness, it's because in that moment, temporarily, we have relinquished the sense of self and its desires. You know, like, if you want something, you know, I want to live in a new place. I want to move. I want to live in a different place. I want to move. I want to live somewhere else, right? You're not happy the entire time you're wanting. The sense of self is wanting. But if things unfold so that you happen to move, when you first arrive in this new place and you're there and you're just being there and the happiness is present, it's because in that moment you've let go of the sense of self, you've let go of the wanting, and you are temporarily being. and so the happiness of the natural self arises. But then the wanting starts again. I want to add a new room to my house. I want, you know, to buy all new furniture. I want, and as soon as all of that arises, sense of self arises and the suffering arises again. So because we can temporarily let go of the sense of self and just be, we can be with our grandchildren, be with our pets, be with the sunset, be with the sunrise, be with our contemplation. Sure, we can know happiness, but we're knowing happiness because we've temporarily surrendered the sense of self. We've temporarily surrendered wanting. You're temporarily just being. Permanent happiness comes from permanent surrender of the sense of self, permanent surrender of desire, permanent surrender of personal will. When there is sense of self permanently, there is no more suffering. There is only happiness. Because the eternal being is nothing but happiness. And again, that comes as a revelation when the sense of self is no more. We realize we were always trying to get happiness for the self, but that could not be achieved because the self itself is suffering. So I have 2 more minutes left, and I don't want to go into the next question because there's no way that we could address it in 2 minutes. So what I'll do instead is just read the 2 questions and the answers that we went over tonight as kind of like a review. So the first question, how can the silence of the guru, who gives no initiation, nor does any other tangible act, be more powerful than his word? How is such silence better than the study of scriptures? The answer, silence is the most potent form of work. However vast and emphatic the scriptures may be, they fail in their effect. The guru is quiet, and grace prevails in all. This silence is more vast and more emphatic than all the scriptures put together. Question, but can the devotee obtain happiness? The answer, the devotee surrenders himself to the master, and it means that there is no vestige of individuality retained by him. If the surrender is complete, all sense of self is lost, and then there can be no misery or sorrow. The eternal being is nothing but happiness. That comes as a revelation. So Ken, I'll do what we had talked about at the last leadership meeting. I will create a draft post. And then you can put the link to the recording there. And thank you, everyone. And I enjoy going to movie discussion group with you next. Bye.